Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Bonjour. Dobro jutro. Welcome. You're listening to Live with Kathy on Blog Talk Radio, the world's largest social network, reaching listeners not only locally, nationally, internationally, and in any country in the world. Discover what the world has to say. Thousands of shows and millions of listeners. Today's show is unique. It is a tribute to iron workers. And the show is brought to you by Iron Workers District Council of Chicago and vicinity. The mission and purpose today is to acknowledge iron workers, to recognize them as co-creators of art in the form of creative construction, to illuminate the character of iron workers, their hidden talents, to pay homage to their commitment to family work ethics revealed not only in their artistry, but in the spirit of brotherhood and solidarity. Did you know that iron workers offer a full spectrum in career development? Earn while you learn. More about that later. And I always introduce and recognize iron workers as the Don Perignon of the trades. And this morning, it is my pleasure to introduce the General President of Iron Workers. Good morning, Walter.
Good morning, Kathy. Always a pleasure to be with the family of iron workers.
My goodness. Did you ever think that you would ever become an iron worker? Tell us about you, Walter.
Well, my route to becoming an iron worker wasn't usually the general course that we see with many of our members. I was in high school in California. I knew the things that I liked to do, and like too many high school graduates, I went to the guidance counselor and told her I like to climb around, I like to build, and she says, "Oh, well, you want to be an engineer, and you need to go off to college." So I followed that route, went off to college, studied engineering at Virginia Tech, mining engineering actually, and during the course of that, I developed friends there, and one of the gentlemen, Dave, he says, "What are you doing this summer? Why don't you come to Richmond be an iron worker with me?" I said, "An iron what?" He said, "An iron worker." I had no idea what iron workers were, what they did. I said, "No, I'll just go on back to California." And what I did during the summers to earn money was deliver furniture for Montgomery Wards. And he says, "It pays $7.25 an hour." I said, "When do we go?" So off to Richmond I went, and David worked during the summers as an iron worker. He had uncles and all that were in the local. Work was in high demand at that time. They needed people and went to the hall, and they sent us out to the job and got to the job, on the way to the job, got the tools I needed and showed up brand spanking new. And I was getting a little anxious because I didn't know really exactly what I was supposed to do when I got there. And David said, "Don't worry, just follow me." And as soon as we got there, the foreman says, "Okay, you go with him, and Slim, you come with me." And off we went, and up a column he went, and I looked at it, I said, "Okay," up a column I went, and at the end of that day, I knew what I wanted to do. I wanted to be an iron worker. I worked all summer there, had a great time, came back in the fall to go to school, stopped in Roanoke, Virginia, the union hall there, said I wanted to put an application in for the apprenticeship program. They told me we take applications once a year, come back in November, which I did, and in January of 74, I started my career as an apprentice iron worker.
How exciting was that? Walter, did
exciting
you know
for me, it wasn't too exciting for my parents. I'd like to broke their heart.
What would you say to a young person, whether you know that women are in the trade, we already know that, and we'll talk about it later on in the show. But what would you say, how would you encourage the young people today, college versus a trade, How would you share your experience with them to encourage them to at least take a look at it?
I think, you know, we have to get the word out to young people that that's a viable option of them, that it's a good career, a good future for them and their family, good earning potential. You know, when you earn while you learn, that's a considerable difference between what a college graduate faces in paying for their education. And actually, upon graduation versus a journeyman over his career will make a tremendous amount of money and in most cases will exceed what a college graduate does throughout their career. And it's a good option for young people. And I think I give the same advice to any young person I gave my own daughter. Follow your passion of what you like to do. You do it well enough and you make a good living at it. But being happy in what you do is the key element. And for people that aren't, you know, we do a lot of recruiting through the high schools, and we go to coaches. We go to the coaches and say, we know you know young men who you know for yourself aren't on the college track, but they've got good discipline, they got good work ethic. We want them in the ironworkers. Let's give them an opportunity. And we're starting to see some change in the guidance counselors now because all of a sudden they recognize what the opportunities are. And now with the demand that's out there, it opens up more doors for everyone, and we actively recruit.
What's interesting, and most people need to know this, you have to qualify. By the way, I'll give you the website for ironworkers, www.ironworkers.org. You need to qualify, and if you do, you're working now for 4 years, and you're getting paid. And does this affect their pension and their health care?
Yes, most of the principals, they have full benefits there that they are earning not only the wages that they make, but they're also getting coverage for themselves, and if they have families, their family, and also that they're starting to earn a retirement with dignity and respect, something they can look forward to.
And it follows them no matter where they go.
That's correct.
They can move from state to state, and it always follows them.
That's exactly right. You know, we were the original exchanges. We helped foment that to where a construction worker could work for a variety of companies, could work for any place in North America that he wanted to work, and his pension and his health benefits all still accumulate in his name and benefit his family no matter where he goes.
Well, you know, Walter, while you're talking, it just occurred to me that ironworking, it's a full package. You don't have to go to the gym to work out because you're working out every day of your life. And the beauty, after the 4 years, you don't have this big tuition bill. Now listen to me, all of you out there, you listeners that are hearing this show today. Hang on to every word. We are not discouraging higher education. But when you choose ironworking, you have chosen the compendium of the trades. It is college affiliated. Now, if you're going to go to college, great. But make your mama and papa proud. Don't waste your time. Now, at that point in time, when you went through, I need clarity on the apprenticeship. What happens once you qualify? Do you pick and choose the area that you want to become proficient in, or do they choose it for you?
So, Kathy, you know, ironwork is a very diverse field between the steel erection that most people associate with us with, but we also do the reinforcing steel that goes in concrete. We do the building envelopes that you see, the glass walls on the exterior buildings. That's all ironwork. We move some of the biggest equipment and build the heaviest industrial plants in the world. That's all part of ironwork. It's so diverse. Basically, there's a lot of skills that you need, and the apprenticeship will train you in all those varieties, and you get to make the choice if you want to specialize, if you want to take advantage of any particular aspect of the trade. So really, it's a lot the individual's decision, and, you know, it's just as far as the future, it's wide open. You can be the best ironworker you want to be day in and day out, make a terrific living for your family. You can decide you want to go into running jobs. You can become the superintendents, foremen, project managers on jobs, working for different companies. You can go into business for yourself. A great many of our contractors were originally ironworkers who started out with a pickup truck and a welding machine and now have erected some of the largest structures in the country. Or you can follow the path into the leadership of the local union and have the honor and the pleasure of representing your brother and sister ironworkers. It's just the phenomenal opportunities that are in front of you.
When we think of the decisions that young people have to make today, now this is not for someone who's a couch potato. This is for someone, whether male or female, that has visions, that they want to be part of building monuments and buildings that define America. Now, what age do they have to be to consider being qualified?
You have to be at least 18 years old to work on construction sites in the United States, and also you have to have a high school diploma or working towards your GED in order to apply.
And what age, what is your oldest worker today?
We have members that are retired. I know of members that are up in 70s that still want to pursue and still enjoy working at the trade, and still with their knowledge and experience are valuable assets on it. So it's again, it's an individual decision. We have, if you want to take advantage of the retirement you've earned, you're welcome to do that. If you can still get out there and enjoy the work that you do, that's your prerogative.
How exciting was it for all of you to know that women qualify in this trade that is demanding physically and mentally? How were they accepted into the genre of ironworking?
Well, we have about 2% women members now. We have many women who have retired as ironworkers who have been in the trade for 30 years. But it's always been viewed as a male-dominated trade, which we are. But we have open arms towards women. Women are valuable assets as iron workers. They're every bit an iron worker that the men are, and we see a growing number of women who want to come in because of the good opportunities that offers. And, again, just like men, they have to have the special drive and the love that they want to get out there, and they want to turn architects' dreams into reality. And they have the same pride in looking at every structure that a man does and say, I helped build that.
Mm-hmm. Now, you do know that I married an iron worker.
Yes, I do.
Walter,
you're one of the lucky women.
Walter, I come from a world of classical ballet and haute couture. Now, so that all of you out there don't think that it was just all the arts that I was involved with, my parents came to America from Croatia and Hungary. I am Croatian and Hungarian and raised in an immigrant background. I remember my father, we affectionately call him Papon, he walked to work, Wisconsin Steel. Every day of his life, he walked there and walked back. And he had work ethics that obviously have been passed on to me. And he built our house that we lived in. Every time I think about it, I think, he was way ahead of his time. And he believed in exercise and to keep moving and to keep the brain moving too. And when I met the Silver Fox, that we affectionately call him today, gorgeous gray hair, and ironworking, I went, what on earth is that? I just couldn't see the comparison. Well, Walter, the powers to be said, ain't no way it's going to work. What? The two of you? Come on. But we prevailed through warts and all. Where did 61 years go? And I want you to know that today we don't pass a bridge or a building that I get the whole history over and over again. And if I might just digress for a moment, all of you, Walter, they have the party for the retirees in June in Merrillville, Indiana, every year. And we attended that for many, many years, and I loved going to it. And I would just sit back. This was Bill's moment of glory. And I want you to know the guys dressed like fashion plates. The retirees would come in suits and ties, and of course they would start reliving the glory days. And then would come in all of the the younger ironworkers with their little trophy girlfriends. But what I got out of it was their sense of pride of being able to build something, even though their work was buried, never to be seen by the naked eye. They took such pride that they were an iron worker. And to this day, our youngest son, Bob, was in ironworking for the longest time. And when he and his dad get together, guess what they talk about? The buildings that they were part of. The stairwells, you know, I'm a stair climber. And Frank DeMarco from Local 63, he co-starred with me in Love Letters, but he knew that I was a stair climber. And he would say, "Listen, Missy, just remember when you start climbing those stairs," I don't know why she does it, but anyway, "when you start climbing those stairs, we iron workers have made it safe for you." And I think it is there is an element that of pride that stays with them, and it never leaves them. You're listening to Live with Kathy on Blog Talk Radio. The guest calling number is 347-637-3789. My email, very quickly, now you all know that you're to have pencil and pad when I'm on the air, and look in the mirror and see yourself as an iron worker, whether you're male or female. It's something to be considered. Email kathystudio@sbcglobal.net. You could write to me at Post Office Box 95913, Hoffman Estates, Illinois, 60195, and be sure and log on the web, kathywatsonspeaks.com. Now remember, Kathy is spelled with C-A-T-H-I. Speaks.com. And my guest today is Walter Weiss. Hey, I'm looking. You're the general president. And I'm looking at your photo right now. By the way, this is how you could find him. Just Google Walter, W-A-L-T-E-R-W-I-S-E. And you'll see his photo. And he was initiated into ironworkers in February 1973, became a journeyman in 1977. Now, Walter, in the early days, did you ever really think that one day you would be general president?
Not at all. It's, you know, everybody's life takes a lot of different turns, and when I was a young iron worker, my dream was to be atop a column and not see anything but footers as far as I could see. I just loved the work that I did, and I loved the people that I worked with. And, I never had a thought, but I had some very good people that helped me along the way and got me involved and made sure that I got involved in the local union, and I went to the union meetings, and I helped make the decisions of what we did with our pension monies and what we did for our collective bargaining agreements and what we did with our conditions on the job and what we did as far as making sure we all stayed safe. And I just had some excellent people along the way that got me started in that direction. And the more I came involved in it, the more I stayed active in the local union. And like all iron workers, I suffered from the terrible trait of not being able to keep my big mouth shut. And when something needed to be done differently, I spoke up, and that led to opportunities within the local where, you know, the people that I work with says, "Well, you know, we want you in there. We'd like you in there. We think you can help us out with the condition of our local union, can give us more work opportunities out there, and we think you're the man to lead us." And that got me on the course of becoming a business manager in my home local union.
Now, Walter, let's go back to the work field. You referred to columns. How tall was the column that you climbed?
Oh, well, the problems were, you know, they were generally set anywhere from 20 to 40 feet, depending on what the structure was that we did. Back in the days I started, you showed up on the job, and there wasn't many ladders around to be seen. That was how you got up to where you had to go to work, and that was part of the craft that you learned.
You climbed them?
If you wanted to keep your job, you climbed them. That's right.
Whoa. Listen to me, listeners. I wasn't kidding. You don't have to go and work out. That is unbelievable. Now, once you were up there and you looked down, obviously you didn't have any problems with climbing high. Height was not an issue with you.
No, not at all. In my youth, I loved getting up in trees and sometimes got into trees that my parents weren't too proud of, but just liked doing around. And I viewed when I went to Iron Workers, I get the opportunity to work on some of the largest jungle gym sets in the world.
Oh, I love it. Now, you sound as though you were a spirited, precocious young man. Is that right?
Well, I guess I think some people have used a little different terms than that, but that sounds good for radio.
Uh-huh.
But I love the trade, and as you say, that's a person who works with their hands, their heart, and their mind. That's an artist, and that's how I always viewed ironwork as an artist. So it's not surprising to see the attraction between you and the silver fox, because I'm sure there's a lot of similarities in your spirits.
Oh, they abound, but we're worlds apart. And I remember Frank DeMarco saying to me, "Listen, Missy, we did ballet on the beam before you even thought of writing your story about iron workers, what a noble profession." And one day I said to the silver fox, and you know his balance, I want all of you to know that he's going to be 87 on July 2nd. His balance is awesome, Walter. I'm just in awe. And he said, "Well, Kev, when you're walking a beam and you have to do it and you're carrying a load, your balance is perfected. Because if you don't, you're history. Then this is not the trade that you should be in." Now, this goes back years and years and years ago. Before we go on to the safety of it, I still have another question. Now, really think about this, because in early days you said that you never thought about being the general president. But what drove you to that path? There had to be an epiphany. There had to be something that said, you know, that fire in the belly, I got to do this. This is me.
Well, once I started as a business manager and representing our workers, and the iron workers, and seeing what could be accomplished for them, you know, I approached every day as just what's the best thing that I can do. You know, I look myself in the mirror every morning, and I go, what am I going to do for the iron workers today? And that's what drove me, because the benefit that I received from the men that I worked with, I mean, that's something that I look every day at, how can I repay that? Because it was a definitive moment in my life. And it was never a desire to sit there and go, well, I'm going to be general president of this organization. I just approached every job I ever had, from apprentice on through the various positions with the local union international, as doing the best I can day in and day out. And that goes from the people that I worked with originally. I had some great mentors there. I mean, I had worked with one gentleman, Lou Mabry. Lou's passed away since then, but his one word was everything was, be the best that you can every day, no matter what you do. If you're punking bolts, you won't be the best bolt punker. And I used to, when I was business manager, I used to make sure that every apprentice got a tour with Lou, just to be able to instill that kind of work ethic in them. And again, just approach every day doing the best I can, and it basically caught the attention of people who gave me additional opportunities here in Washington with the international. And you know, that wasn't a game plan to reach one. It was just hard work, like every iron worker does, nose to the grindstone, get the task done at hand.
Well, Walter, it appears to me that you're futuristic in your thinking and a visionary. But now I need to ask you this. What was your greatest obstacle?
Well, you know, I have never viewed anything I have as a great obstacle as far as within my career. Was always just try to accomplish the best that you can, work as hard as you can every day to get that. Now that we've had lots of obstacles, a challenge as far as before our membership, there's lots of obstacles that we face day in and day out from the economy that we work in on that. And again, it's like every iron worker on the job site. You look what has to do, you know where the piece has to go, You know, you got to figure out a way to get it there, and that's what you work to do. And, you know, our members, you know, they engineer things day in and day out. They overcome obstacles every day because they know what the goal is. And that's the same thing, the same vision I had as business manager and now as general president. I know where we have to be. I know what the goal is, and it's work day in and day out, very hard to accomplish that. And there are no obstacles. There's just challenges that we work around and we overcome. And that's just part of the spirit of being an iron worker. You know, the biggest thing iron workers like to have is somebody tell them there's things they can't do.
And it gets done.
And it gets done.
You're listening to Live with Kathy on Blog Talk Radio. And it's my pleasure to have Walter Weiss, the general president of Iron Workers, as our guest. And to find out more about Iron Workers, log on www.ironworkers.org. Now, Walter, you talk about other men being your mentor. You are a visionary, and you see it in your mind's eye before anyone else does, and you move on it. Confucius say that if you love your job, you never work a day in your life, and I don't think you've ever worked a day in your life because you love what you're doing. Now, I need to ask you this. Who have you mentored, and where are they now?
Well, I look at, you know, I believe you live by example, and I try to present example of the right work ethic you have to have, the desire you have to have, the energy you have to put into your job, and I look at every person I meet every day as a chance to try to instill something in them that can help them make that next step to whatever they want to achieve in their life. I love getting around the young apprentices to see the energy that they have, the passion they have about iron work and what can be done there. And I just view every opportunity to meet anybody as somebody that you can help influence their life, and you know what direction they take after that is entirely up to them.
Now, we're in circa 2014. The year to unleash the power of your voice, your choice. What has been the biggest challenge of running an international union? That is humongous. It's so diverse. The core is you. You're the anchor, but there are so many dimensions. What has been your biggest challenge in 2014?
Well, first of all, I have a great team at international headquarters and throughout the local unions, the leadership and throughout the local unions, the contractors that we work with, the work we do through our labor management group, Impact. You know, a sole individual doesn't accomplish anything without the help of a great many people around them, and I'm fortunate in the iron workers to have that kind of support around it. But it is challenging times for unions overall. You know, we see the press every day with our detractors in it, trying to seize headlines over that and ignoring the value that we bring to the construction industry, the value we bring to people's lives. And that's the biggest obstacle I see, is basically overturning that preconception of what they have, that a union is, what the iron workers are, how we operate, and what we do. And once you get past that, and it's not framed in a union, non-union issue, it's framed in, our apprenticeship's good. What do we do for his good benefits, having health insurance, having a pension? Is that good for individuals? Once we get past that, the opportunities we bring for the youth, then the separation begins to disappear. But the challenge right now is overcoming those preconceptions that people have. It amazes me. I was down in the South, which is not known for being a very high-density area. The iron workers down were working very hard to change that around with the opportunities coming. But I was at the meeting, and again, I like to go into the lion's den. I like to go to where our competition is. I like to get in front of them and make sure they know that there's a different way of doing business. And one of them says, we've had labor violence down here. We don't need anything to do with unions. And I kept questioning about it, and he gave me this town, and I, you know, try to find out what it was about, and he's right, it was Louisiana. They had labor violence, and it was 103 years ago. So that's the kind of, bias we have to overcome out there. And the way we do that is by delivering those jobs safely, delivering them with quality, on time and on budget, and keep winning more advocates for the way the ironworkers do business.
Walter, radio is a strong marketing tool. All of you that are listening to this need to know that the show is being archived. And you could log on www.blogtalkradio.com/Kathy Watson, CathiWatson, and click on June 6th. This is an incredible, incredible opportunity to learn about ironworking from the beginning and the integrity and the confidence, knowing, by the way, I'm so pro-union. Every month, we just love it when I call our bank account and that check is there. The security, raising a family with Bill being in ironworking, I wouldn't change a thing. So all of you, I'm going to give you the archive website again, the URL, blogtalkradio.com/Kathy Watson, and click on June 6th. Hear the show over and over again. Now, I do know the interest span is about 5 seconds, so this is why we have to repeat. Repetition, repetition, repetition. Name recognition, exposure, exposure. If you don't look into it, it's an automatic, it's not for me, but how would you know until you truly log on to ironworkers.org? And you're listening to Live with Kathy on Blog Talk Radio. Now, I know that when you truly have a passion about what you do, that fire in the belly is always there. But what inspires you, Walter, to keep that fire in the belly desire to make a difference in some lives and maybe the world?
It's just the men and women that I represent. You know, seeing them and the things they do, the remarkable things they do on the job site that they accomplish day in and day out. And just then the desire to just return just what has been given to me to make their lives better so they can make the next generation after them their lives better. That's how we've progressed over our history. And, you know, I never wake up in the morning wondering why I'm doing this. You know, it's always, what can I do for iron workers today? And whether that grows out of the passion I have for the trade or ethics that was installed in me as a child between my parents, I don't know. But I'm a fortunate man. I get to make a living doing something I'm excited about. And, you know, the inspiration and desire of what we had to do has never been a problem.
Now, Walter, I need to ask you, what did Mommy and Daddy do? What was their profession, their trade?
My mother was a teacher for part of her life, and then when I was 8 years old, we moved to Los Angeles, and my father drove a bus, and then he worked in a warehouse for Montgomery Wards, and my mother worked in as a bookkeeper for that. And the one thing they inspired in my sister and myself was, you know, you work hard. You can accomplish whatever you want to. It just comes from hard work. And they gave us the opportunities, the ability to get a fine education, and they never tried to steer us in one direction or another other than to follow your own desires. And even when I became an iron worker, well, it was a bit shock from them when I dropped out of college, though, but they had faith that I was doing what was best for me. And I'm glad that they both lived to see, you know, the course I was on as far as becoming business manager and then coming to work for the International.
Awesome. Your parents were way ahead of their time. Now, Walter, I need to ask you a very intimate question. What are your thoughts when you go to bed at night?
Well, I tell you, that's, you know, that's an interesting question. I tell you, I don't have any problem sleeping. You know, when I go to bed, I'm out. And but usually it's the thing is the morning when I wake up and just start laying out the course of the day and what I want to try to accomplish through there. Just the nighttime when I go to bed, it's just a very, I have a great partner, my wife Liz. I have a wonderful daughter who's embarking on her own career, and I just think about them. What can I do for them? And the security.
Now, when we're thinking about, you know, children are our future. And I couldn't help but think of your mom and dad. They truly were your role models. Because what they've instilled in you is follow your heart, follow your dream. And you did. Now, your predecessor, Joe Hunt, was the catalyst behind Impact. Did you file, was it controversial? Tell us about Impact.
Joe Hunt was, when you talk about, when you use the term visionary, that is what Joe Hunt was. Hunt is and still is a visionary as far as what he approached. And he saw the need that we had to have a better relationship with our contractors, that it shouldn't be adversarial, because we both had to work together if we were going to be successful. And I think the concept labor management groups had been around before, but where Joe Hunt took it was to make it a true functioning entity, and not like too many of them that just exist on paper only and don't do things to go out there and improve the lives of iron workers or our contractor partners. And I think as Impact began taking on the role that he had vision for, there's some aspects of it that became controversial. But, you change people's mind by successes, and that's what Impact's done in its 10 years there of where we've gone for, how we approach our problems now. And now it's leapfrogged other labor management groups and really has become a model for the industry.
Now, we did invite Kevin Hilton to join the discussion.
I'm right here, Kathy.
You are?
I am right here, enjoying this conversation this morning.
Awesome. Just awesome. You see, I just get chills when I'm talking about ironworking, because people need to know that without them, nothing would be standing. And you look at the Trump Tower. You have been all over, and I see all of this. I was in Malaysia, and I saw the towers. And without iron workers, they simply wouldn't be standing. But, Kevin, tell us your part. How the two of you work hand in glove.
Well, we, General President Wise and I, talk on a constant and continuous basis because you know, one of the things that he says when he's addressing many, many audiences, and particularly apprentices, is the first thing an iron worker apprentice needs is an iron worker employer. So, you know, just to echo what Walt said, you know, the fact of the matter is to get more work, you need entities out there that are going to go out, they're going to find the projects, they're going to bid those projects with a sharp pencil, and they're going to get that work, and then they're going to call iron workers, and the iron workers are going to get the job done safely, on time, and on budget. So, you know, really, you're right. Joe Hunt was a visionary. His good friend Bill Brown of Ben-Hur Construction shared that vision. And the fact of the matter is, and I'm sure Walt will agree with me, probably 98% of everything the local union out there in North America and the iron worker contractors agree on what they're talking about. You know, they have a shared vision. They're attached at the hip. They got to get out there and get the work and give people the dignified life that you and your husband, the Silver Fox, and your family enjoyed. And that's what we stand for. We stand for dignity in the workplace. We stand for safe working conditions and a dignified life for a hell of a lot of people. And I love the aspect of what we do. We get more work, which is the business side, but we stand for the dignity in the workplace, which is the social justice side. And I'll tell you what, our work is very, very important. We've got a long ways to go and a short time to get there, but I feel like every day we're getting a little closer to that point where we have true, true cooperation and we start taking back the market.
When you talk about impact and iron workers, how does it intertwine? How do you help each other? What do you hope to accomplish through impact that will resonate with iron workers?
Well, Kathy, impact was created and designed for one reason. That's to give iron workers more opportunities to increase our market share out there, to create better working conditions, to approach our problems as a union ironworking industry, not just as a contractor or as a local union. And the goal of it, we will reach our goals, we will accomplish our goals. And you look at the variety of things. We looked at all the elements in our trade that really require cooperation and input from the contractors and the local unions. And you look at the variety of things, training, you look at safety, you look at all these things that we should be working together on, and that's what it's helped accomplish. It's already changed the way we do work out there. It's showing increases in safety. It's showing markets starting to pick up, work starting to pick up. Our contractors are starting to grow again coming out of this economy. And it's meeting the mission that it was created for, and we still have a long ways to go, but we're getting there, and we couldn't get there without impact, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't exist as we had previously as adversarial entities in our industry.
You know, Kathy, of course, Walt is right spot on here, but, you know, I was thinking as he was speaking, one of the very best aspects of what I am very, very privileged to do is when I get the opportunity to speak at a local union meeting. As we spoke a couple weeks ago, I'm not an iron worker, so there has to be a special invitation for me to come into the local union and speak to the membership.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Impact has been around for about 11 years now, and there's still a lot of misconceptions because, you know, you think of the United States, and it's been around for so long, and there's still misconceptions about the United States. So you think about an organization that's only been around for 11 years. We're still in the crawling stage. But it is so much fun to get up in front of the local union and tell them where their hard-earned money goes and what projects they fund and the mission that pure, clear mission and goal of the organization is to grow the iron workers and their contractors, because that's not only good for the local union, that's not only good for the contractors, it's good for the United States of America and Canada. And I'm telling you, that's a community good. And when Walt says we're going to accomplish our goals, you're damn right we're going to accomplish our goals, because we write them down, we keep them in front of us 24/7, and with that type of focus and pulling the local union together with their contractors and attacking the market and telling people what we do every day, they're blown away, Kathy. When mm-hmm. when Walt goes out or I go out or Bill Brown or whoever and go out and meet with the end users and tell them the infrastructure we have to train highly safe, highly productive, highly skilled workers, and the ability of the contractors to engage that work and plan that work and provide the materials, they're blown away. They can't believe they've been tripping over our competition for years. Now they have a true choice, and I'll tell you what, when we inspire those people, they can't wait to use us. It's a blessing, it's an opportunity, it's a privilege, but to see those light bulbs go off when you're talking to the local union membership and telling them what we're doing, and then the really fun part is after you get off the dais there at the local union and talk with the guys and hear them face to face, my God, it is so energizing. It's unbelievable.
You're listening to Kevin Hilden, who is the CEO of Impact, and live on Live with Kathy on Blog Talk Radio. The website for Impact, www.impact-net.org. Let me give that to you one more time. Impact-net.org. And to learn more about ironworking in the trade, the Domperion, ironworkers.org. Now, Kevin, Impact, the formation, someone had to have a dream. Someone saw it in their mind's eye that this is how you were going to bring two entities together. Whose dream was it? Who took the first step in the journey of 1,000 miles?
It was really the Walt's immediate predecessor, Joe Hunt. He was an iron worker out of St. Louis, and he sat down with his good friend, Bill Brown, who's also an iron worker out of St. Louis, but runs a 100-plus-year-old company, Ben Hur Construction. And I think they sat down and talked for many, many months before it was actually formed. And, you know, I'll throw it over to Walt because he was in the inner circle there, and he would know more about what happened behind the scenes.
What happened, Walt?
Well, it was really the come together that said we had to find a better way of doing business. And that's what we set about doing, and to bring to people, and said we will start with a small and we will build from that and build on success to change perception and minds out there. And we were very fortunate that one of the first decisions that Bill and Joe had to make was a CEO for Impact, and they chose Eric Waterman, who was well known in the industry, especially with contractors and labor. And together they set about building the infrastructure of Impact.
And then the rest is history. You do know that the journey of 1,000 miles starts with that first step, that first thought. And then you build on it, and you build on it, and it's growing, and it's growing, and it's growing. But may we now talk a little bit about safety? And before you get into it, Bill was working iron when OSHA wasn't there. And he would say to me, well, what do you mean, safety? I walk this beam every day of my life. And thank you, ironworking, because I told you earlier, his center of balance is incredible. So why, I knew that they had to, when did OSHA come in, and how did all of that begin?
Well, basically, it took, you know, as much as they, you know, we like to view ourselves as invincible as iron workers, the fact of the matter is that we weren't, and we aren't. You look way back in our history, and 100 years ago, we were losing 1% of our membership a year to fatal injuries on the job site. You look back to the time when they built the Rockefeller Center, when they had the, you know, the famous picture of men at lunch all sitting on the beam. At that time, they were losing 2% of fatalities on the job. That translated today, you're talking 1,000 members a year would lose their lives. We've been able to work hard at reducing that. We've been able to work hard at putting things in place through OSHA that affected the whole industry, union and non-union alike, that saved lives. And OSHA was a huge part of that. It came about in 1974, I believe. But when you talk about safety, it's a personal responsibility. You know, we've worked hard towards being safe, especially in the last 3 years. We've seen significant improvements in it. Unfortunately, we just had our fifth fatality this year occur, and you know, that's a tragedy that all of us want to make sure we fight to prevent. But one thing I have with all of our representatives of every local union, every business manager, we don't have any conversation with any one member or group of members or local union without being safety in there, because that's our number one priority, to make sure everybody gets home safe every day. And we do that because of the camaraderie we have with each other, and that's what's led to the dramatic decrease that we have in fatalities within the industry now, is each member looking out for each other, is keeping their eye out, fulfilling our brotherhood, and we're going to make sure we take care of each other out there. And I think that's what's led to the dramatic decrease we've had in the last few years. And like I said, I stress that to each and every member all the time. That's part of being an iron worker, a union iron worker, is you have to have that obligation that you're going to take care of each other out there. And I think the realization of that is what's led to it. You know, now we have OSHA came in with a lot of improvements. We worked hard putting in a new subpart R for steel that has dramatically decreased the accidents and on jobs from collapses. And although Bill had great balance and iron workers have great balance, too many times things out of their control caused their death, mm-hmm. or the building itself collapsed or bad foundations. And we've done a lot through regulations to improve that. But the final responsibility still comes down to the individuals out there. And one of the great parts of being a union iron worker, if you see something that's not right, you can stand up and say, we got to stop here. We have to get this fixed. This is wrong. This is a threat to our mm-hmm. lives, and we're going to do it. And we have, because of a union, we have the right to be able to stand up and do that and be backed up from it. And that's just and that's what leads to it. When you look at the Center to Protect Worker Rights, say that a non-union iron worker is 12 times more likely to die on the job in his career than a union iron worker. You know, our fatality rate is about one-third of that of the industry at large. So, you know, the way we train, the way we know how to do our jobs, the respect we have each other and keeping each other safe has led to those type of decreases, and we're working hard to make sure that we come up with zero.
It is comforting to know that iron workers have each other's back. And, you know, the epiphany, while you were talking, Walter, we're on the same page. I wrote down, if you see it, say something. And you confirmed that. I thought, my goodness, we're working telepathically about the safety. If you see it, say something, because the next time it could be you. And is truly looking out for your brother. It's the brotherhood and the sisterhood of iron workers. How to get in touch with them? You're listening to Live with Kathy on Blog Talk Radio. And I love my job. I never go to work. I don't mind getting up at 5 in the morning on Friday morning. For all of you early birds, you know, iron workers, they have no problem getting up early in the morning. My pa got up at 4:30, so I guess habits don't change. But this is giving all of you the open door, the opportunity to see if this resonates with you. So get your pen and pad out, because I'm going to give you the websites again. www.ironworkers.org. And to learn more about IMPACT, www.impact-net.org. And it's exciting. I get excited when I'm thinking about iron workers. By the way, their poetry, the poems, the talent that they have within the family, within the consortium, is unbelievable. But now, Walter, I want to take you to traversing the Serengeti, the Maasai Mara. I was in Africa. I wrote a journal. And Kevin, thank you so much for presenting me with this outline. You both are just geniuses. You just don't know it. But according to what Kevin sent to me a few years back, you climbed Mount Kilimanjaro. I sat in the viewing room in Amboseli writing my journal, and I looked out at this magnificent mountain, and they call it, the natives call it, the mother. Why on earth did you climb it? Are you a climber? What drove you to do this?
Well, you know, iron workers, we always want to be on top of everything. So that was one of the tallest places in the world that I felt I could get on top of. One of my passions is I enjoy hiking. I enjoy being outside. Gives me a lot of time just to thank about the variety of subjects and everything, and that was just Kilimanjaro was the, I guess, the highest peak that I felt I could get on top of without having any true mountaineering experience. And I was.
But why did you have to go to Africa? We have tall mountains here.
Oh, and I've been on top of several of them here also.
Oh.
But
which
you know,
one?
Iron workers, you always want to shoot for the biggest, the tallest, and the best.
Okay, so when did you climb Kilimanjaro?
During Christmas of 2012.
2012. And who traversed with you on this journey?
I have my, she's now my wife, Liz. She's an avid hiker also, and it was a trip that we did together, and it was, you cannot do the hike without going through a guide trip and everything, and actually we went in through one of the National Geographic guides.
Did you have a Sherpa? Don't they call them? They have their guides that are so trained, but there was a tragedy not too long ago, and they stopped the climb. Was it Mount Everest?
It might have Everest, yes.
Yes.
Yes, that's a requirement of the government there that you have to be on a tour, and actually there was 15 of us that were hikers, and actually we had, it was about 56 people carrying support gear for us. So
okay,
we didn't have to do too much on our own. They
all
took
right,
very
now.
Good care of us, and the native population there was just phenomenal.
Okay, how long did it take? Just give us a quick overview.
Okay, I was in Tanzania for 14 days. That included basically the Serengeti as far as seeing the animals, which was just phenomenal. The actual climb.
The wildebeest.
The climb up the top of Kilimanjaro and back down took us 7.5 days.
Really? Where did you sleep at night? In tents? Did they pitch all of this for you?
Just like backpacking, just two-person tents that they would pitch for us, and they would provide all the food and everything. It's a very well-orchestrated event, and again, it's something I always had dreamed and thought about doing, and the opportunity presents itself to finally go and do it.
What about the altitude? Did you have any problems with altitude?
High altitude is difficult. It affects everybody differently. I had some issues with it, but again, that same iron worker mentality comes into play. You know where you got to get to, and you know what you got to do, and you just keep putting one foot in front of the other.
Okay, I understand you're a big baseball fan.
I enjoy baseball.
If you could change places with the son of an iron worker, Bryce Harper, the star left fielder for the Washington Nationals, would you do it?
Well, he might have the second best job in the country, but I got the best job in the country.
But
maybe one day.
Good for you. Okay, now we're getting close to the end of the show, and this has been so joyous. But let me ask both of you. We have about a minute and 54 seconds. If you were not general president of Iron Workers, what would you be? And Kevin, if you were not the CEO of Impact, what would you be?
Well, that's an easy question for me. I'd be an iron worker. I'm still an iron worker. Anytime I fill out a form, they say occupation, iron worker is what goes down. You know,
who's the greatest? Wait a minute. Walter, who's the greatest iron worker you ever saw?
Hey, every one of our members is the greatest.
Okay.
As far as working with, again, I'd have to go back to Lou Mabry.
All right. Now, what will the iron workers look like when you throw the keys to your successor? We have a minute.
Bigger, better, and safer.
There you go. Kevin,
amen.
What would you
amen.
Be? Amen. What would you be?
I would be a football coach. I'd be the coach of the University of Michigan football team. And that doesn't come as a surprise to anybody who knows me. I'll tell you what. I love a challenge. I'm really blessed to have this challenge in front of me and privileged to do this. And I'll tell you what, this is a full-time plus job, and I work with the best people. We are going to see that goal achieved. So help us God, Kathy.
Now, thank you so much, Walter Weiss and Kevin Hilton. You were awesome. I want to give the websites. I just have 20 seconds left. www.ironworkers.org, www.impact-net.org. Thank you both so much
Thank you, Kathy.
Give our best to Bill.
Thank you. Make it a great day, and I'll make mine better. Listeners, you've been listening to Iron Workers, What a Noble Profession. Talk to you on Tuesday at 11:30. And again, thank you, Walter and Kevin. You made my day. Au revoir. A salute, Jindan. I salute all of you.